You know what we need? We need a radio show on the air, like maybe on Saturday nights, that talks about this kind of thing.
Hi, Dr. Hoffman here. I want to let my listeners know about a brilliant Renaissance man named Dr. Arthur Perry.
You want to talk to Arthur Perry? The best in plastic surgery.
He's a distinguished, award-winning cosmetic surgeon trained at Harvard and Cornell with a practice in New York City on Fifth Avenue.
Dr. Oz, are you there?
I'm here, Arthur, and I want to again applaud you, having worked with you on a book and numerous other activities.
He's written numerous medical journal articles, and he's contributed to textbooks on plastic surgery.
Your remarkable knowledge, but also your grace at delivering content, which is why it's been a blessing to have you on my show so many times.
It's clear that when it comes to skin and aging, this doctor knows what he's talking about.
Joan, the public wants to know.
The public doesn't give a damn.
As a really, really gifted physician, I want to pay you the highest tribute I can give to a surgeon, which is when people come to you, they don't come for an operation, they come for an opinion. And that's why I trust you with my friends and relatives.
When I was a resident at the University of Chicago, we had a...
That means you're smart.
I didn't realize we were going to get the Michael Jordan of plastic surgeon. 90210 bows to this guy.
And welcome. This is Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle right here on WABC. And I hope you're enjoying your weekend as a prelude. You know, is it a week of Memorial Day for some of us? It might be. Well, I'm your evening entertainment and education here on WABC. I'm here to talk about you and what you look like, and your wrinkles and brown spots and earlobes that may be getting too big. How about that? Earlobes that are hanging down as you get older. We're here to talk about that. We're also here to talk about facelifts and eyelid lifts and skin care and breast augmentations. That's what this show is all about. I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon. Been host of this show for 13 years now. And I'm here on Saturday evenings. And if this is the very first time you've ever tuned in, where have you been? Well, you can become part of the show by giving us a call. 848-WABC, 800-848-9222. That is the number. If you call in, have a good question for me, we will send you a bottle of Nighttime. What is that stuff, you say? Well, it's really all you need in a skincare program. I've created a pretty succinct skincare program. That means there's not a lot of wasted steps. You can go online and find, programs that have 6 steps in the morning and 8 steps in the evening. Who really is going to do that? I don't know anyone, not even my patients, not even my celebrity patients. They're just not going to do it, and neither will you. But you will do 1 step in the morning and 1 step in the evening, and that's what my program is all about. I've combined products, combined ingredients, the things that really make a difference. So in my evening program, that's what you're going to get today if you give me a call. It's Nighttime, and yeah, it's Nighttime. That's what it's called. There's vitamin C, vitamin A, fruit acids, and a lot of other good things, and none of the nonsense that you find in so many skin creams and things that are just unnecessary. So give me a call, 800-848-WABC. If you listened last week, I started a discussion on lasers, and I really hope to get into more of that last week, but we had so many phone calls, and I love your calls, so we'll take them again tonight. But I really wanted to get into the discussion of lasers and what they can do for you. Lasers have been around for a long time now. And in medicine, they came in the late 1970s. You know, here we are in 2018. We think they're so new. They're the buzzword, right, lasers? But really, they are very strong devices that were invented over 50 years ago and first used in medicine in the late 1970s. I got my hands on a laser in 1981 at Harvard Medical School, where I trained in surgery, and we had one of the very early argon lasers, which they don't even have anymore. This thing took up half the room, had its own refrigerated mechanism, air conditioning mechanism to keep the room cool because it was so big and generated so much heat. Now I have in my office lasers that sit on a desktop, you know, like your little computer on the desktop. That's how big the lasers are now. They're really quite remarkable. So we're going to talk about the lasers for hair removal, for wrinkle removal, for tattoo removal, for vascular removal. What's that? Well, those are the capillaries, the red lines and marks on your face and on your legs. And we're going to talk about intense pulse light, which is not quite laser, but sort of. So during the show, we are going to do all those things. But before we get to that, we did mention last week about these home devices. And you know, not to be repetitive, but I got a lot of emails during the week about one home device or another home device. You know, so I'm just going to refer you to the Journal of Dermatologic Surgery. It's one of the big journals out there. And they reviewed all of these home devices very recently, and they really found that there's just not a lot of evidence to support the use of these home lasers. So when you go out and buy one of these things and spend $400 or $500 on them and expect to get hair removal or all sort of hair growth, how about that one? They've got lasers that will grow hair. Maybe. I don't think so. But they're out there. You can buy those. So when you go and spend your hard-earned money, realize that there's really not a lot of science to them. And when we talk about science, I'm not talking about one person that says they got a good result with something. We can find that with anything. You can find someone that ate asparagus and you know, got less wrinkles the next week. Someone will come out there and say something like that. That's not science. That's called an anecdote. And real scientists know the difference between anecdotes and science. Science is based on real studies, what are called randomized controlled studies, double-blind studies. These are the buzzwords, but these are what distinguish real science from fake science. I guess in 2018 that might be what we call it, right? Fake science, like fake news. But really, science that is not. And just because something is FDA approved doesn't mean it actually works. And isn't that interesting? But it doesn't. It just means that it's substantially similar to something else out there. So when you buy these home devices, be careful, because for the most part, if they have the right science, then they just don't have the right power. And what that means is the real lasers out there are very powerful instruments. I can take paint off the side of a house with a CO2 laser that's designed for your wrinkles. And in fact, that is exactly how CO2 lasers were first used. They were used to take paint off of ships. Can you imagine that? And now we're taking skin off of you, oh my goodness, to actually create a little bit of a wound and then create shrinkage of the skin, generation of collagen, and that's how the CO2 lasers, which really do work and have been around since the 1990s, how they work. And I have one in my office, and it's called a CO2 laser. I can set the laser at either the full mode, where we actually remove your upper layer of skin, creating a wound. It has profound effects. But not too many people like that anymore, because you go through a period of several weeks of healing. You have to hide, but when you heal, your skin is smoother, your skin is less wrinkled, but it's red. It's red for quite a while, as long as 3 months. And in fact, I've had patients even longer than that. So you have to be prepared for that. That's the granddaddy of the laser procedures, the CO2 laser, which we don't do too much anymore, because now we have these modes called the fractionated modes. So, you know, there's lasers with brand names like Fraxel, you might have heard of, but there are others also, and I have one that does the fractionated mode. And all that means is that some of the skin is left intact. It doesn't remove the entire layer of skin, and kind of like drills holes in the skin. Sounds wonderful, doesn't it? But that's what we're really doing, allowing healing in between the intact skin, between the healing holes. In the end, the deeper we go, the more holes we actually make in the skin. Oh, this sounds great. You're going to stay home now after you hear this. But this is the fact of life. All these machines are designed to create some sort of an injury. And when they create an injury, you heal that injury, just like you did, as I said last week, 10,000 years ago, if you were burned by something, you heal that injury by shrinking the skin. So when we do it with a laser, we get shrinkage of the skin, and your wrinkles are less. So we set the fractionated laser at different depths and different strengths, and we can alter the effect. So you can have basically a facial, an exfoliating facial. You come in, I want to look better for tonight. We zap your skin, and there's no wound, no result with the wrinkle reduction, but you look a little better because it's exfoliating. It exfoliates. So that's the most superficial setting on the laser, or we can go all the way down with the laser to actually reducing, removing skin and creating a wound. So let's take a phone call now. Sheila, we've got Sheila on the line from Staten Island. What can I do for you? What is your wrinkle?
Yes, Dr. Perry. My question is, you have often mentioned regarding the skin does not need any moisturizer because it generates its own sebum, which is a natural moisturizer, and also it's a protectant against toxins from the from around you. Now, my question is, does that mean we should not wash our face as often as we should because we would be washing away that sebum?
Well, Sheila, that's a good question. And remember, it's a complicated question because we live in a civilized society. So, Sheila, you know, we were not meant to wash. The only time 10,000 years ago we were meant to get into the water at all was to maybe find a fish, right? You know, so that we can eat. But we're as mammals, as humans, we weren't meant to wash off that layer of goo on our skin. So I suppose if you went back in a time machine and found people, you know, a few hundred years ago or a few thousand years ago, their skin was pretty greasy and fairly dirty. And you're right, that sebum, that's what we make, it has a lot of nice properties. There's antibacterial properties and antifungal properties, and it actually repels insects. Wow. And it also attracts mates with things called pheromones. But, Sheila, if you follow the, I guess that's the paleo skin approach, right? If you follow that, you're not going to have too many friends because you'll smell pretty bad. You will. You'll smell bad. You'll look bad. And, you know, we live in a civilized society, so we're going to take care of ourselves. We wear clean clothing. We wash our face. And so my attitude is we do want to wash our face, especially, you know, if you live in the city or on a farm and almost anything in between, because there are toxic chemicals in the air. When you walk the streets, when you walk to my office on Fifth Avenue, and the buses go by, and there's all sorts of stuff, and there's this steam that comes out of the streets. You know the story in New York. And you get home at night, and if you take a cloth and just wipe it on your face, there's going to be some dirt, and there's also going to be some oil. So when we come back from our break, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. Stay on the line, Sheila. 800-848-9222.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
And what is your wrinkle? I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. We've got Sheila on the line. Are you still there, Sheila? Maybe
Dr.
we have her.
Perry, just one more question. Now, I do understand how it's necessary because we live in New York and it gets very dirty, so we have to clean. But just for the sake of information, is this sebum also helpful against wrinkles?
No evidence whatsoever. Absolutely not. Okay. Has nothing to do with it. Your oil production has nothing to do with the wrinkles, and it won't protect you, and neither will moisturizer. So many people think, oh, I put moisturizer on my skin. I've been told to do that since age 14, and my mother did it, my grandmother did it, and it's going to help wrinkles. No, it's not. Not going to help at all. As a matter of fact, the reason I'm not the biggest fan of moisturizer, and take this from a guy who makes a moisturizer. You know, I have a product. It's called Soft Time. It's a great moisturizer. I made it because my wife wouldn't give up her moisturizer. So I wanted to make at least the best moisturizer I could if you're going to use it. But the fact is, if you use moisturizer and do not use sunscreen, you actually get more sun damage because you naturally make a kind of a sheen on your skin that reflects some of the light. When you moisturize, you actually absorb more light. So in some ways, moisturizer is worse than not having moisturizer unless you use the sunscreen. All right? So, Sheila, the answer is you should wash your face, in my opinion, twice a day. Once with an exfoliant, that means a washcloth or loofah pad or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm not in favor of the abrasive soaps, however. Wash your face once with and one without. Well, thank you for the call, Sheila, but we do have to get to our guest on our busy line. So today we have a guest from St. Barnabas, and I want to talk to you about Mark Russo. He is a cardiac surgeon, internationally known. He's an expert in heart disease, heart valve disease, and he's an attending at Newark Beth Israel Center, which is an RWJ Barnabas health facility, and he's the director of the Center for Aortic Diseases. He'll tell you what an aorta is in a minute. He's the director of cardiothoracic surgery research. He's the director of structural heart disease. Wow, a lot of titles. Dr. Russo is also an assistant professor of surgery at Rutgers, New Jersey Medical School, and he specializes. He's a clinician. He's out there every day helping you with your complex aorta and valve surgery. Dr. Russo, are you there?
I am.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time on your Saturday evening. Cardiac surgeons are busy guys, and I know you are. So let's get right to it. What's aortic stenosis? What is that disease?
So the aortic valve, it's one of the four valves in the heart. The normal size of the aortic valve is about the size of a half dollar. In patients with aortic stenosis, the valve becomes narrow. It can become the size of a dime or even smaller. The aortic valve sits between the main pumping chamber of the heart called the left ventricle and the main blood vessel in the body called the aorta. So all the blood in the body needs to flow through that valve. The purpose of the heart valves is to make sure blood only moves forward. But in the case of aortic stenosis, the valve is actually narrowed, so it restricts blood flow. It literally creates a bottleneck, so blood can't get to the other places in the body that it needs to go. That can cause fatigue for patients, shortness of breath, chest pain. In more advanced cases, patients develop heart failure-like symptoms. They can pass out, and ultimately, if aortic stenosis goes untreated, people unfortunately die from this problem.
Well, what causes aortic stenosis? Is it just something that's inevitable, or cigarette smoking contribute?
You know, it's interesting. Aortic stenosis is largely a disease of aging and genetics. There's no known modifiable risk factors. That is, there's nothing that the patient could do to prevent it. There's nothing that they did to cause it. Unlike most other cardiovascular disease, it's not associated with smoking or high cholesterol or high blood pressure. Again, it's just a product of aging and genetics.
All right, so how common is it? How many people have it, and how did you, as a cardiac surgeon, fix it?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's extremely common. About 1.5 million people in the U.S. Suffer from aortic stenosis. About 250,000 of those people should have it treated. It still is a disease that's undertreated. Probably only about a half to two-thirds of the patients who should undergo treatment actually get treatment, and that's particularly unfortunate because we have good options. The traditional way to fix it is with open heart surgery, and in fact, as a heart surgeon, aortic valve replacement, which is the gold standard for fixing aortic stenosis. That's one of the best operations that I can offer a patient. More recently, we've developed new technologies that actually don't require us to make an incision in the chest. So there's a procedure called transcatheter aortic valve replacement, or called TAVR, that's been developed over the past 10 or 15 years that has completely changed the way that we treat patients. With heart surgery, you can imagine we make an incision in the chest. We use the heart-lung machine. We cut out the old valve. We put in a new one. And again, that's a great operation. And for many people, that is the best option. With TAVR, the catheter-based option, we actually don't stop the heart. We are able to replace the valve through a puncture in the groin. It's actually and we don't cut out the valve. It's the calcium in the valve that causes the aortic stenosis that holds the new valve in place. That procedure only takes about 30 minutes or an hour. In our experience, well more than half the patients actually go home the next day. Frequently, we do the procedure with patients awake and often talking to us. And as soon as the valve's in place, typically patients say that they feel better.
Oh, that's really, really quite amazing. My guest this evening is Dr. Mark Russo, who's a cardiac surgeon at Beth Israel in Newark, one of the great hospitals in New Jersey. So Dr. Russo, now we're talking about these new, I guess you call them newfangled heart valves that go in through your groin. Just an amazing concept where you don't have to make a big incision in the chest. So this is, we call it TAVR surgery. And now you said that patients are going home the very same day?
They typically go home the next day. You know, many of the patients probably could go home the same day. We keep them overnight to be safe. We did replace their heart valve. But again, there's essentially no recovery from the procedure because it's just a puncture in the groin. There's no incisions. And like I said, patients, as soon as the procedure is over, they say that they feel better. Their symptoms often improve in a matter of hours or at least in a matter of days.
All right, so they feel better, and I guess that means they can walk longer distances because with aortic stenosis, I guess people have a hard time even walking from their door to the car, correct?
Yeah, so one of the most common symptoms is fatigue and shortness of breath. What's really satisfying about treating people with aortic stenosis is that fixing their heart valve, replacing their heart valve in the setting of aortic stenosis, patients not only feel better, it improves their functional status, but it also prolongs their life, and that's true across variety of different age ranges and regardless of many other comorbidities. Aortic stenosis is one of the most well-studied diseases that we have in cardiovascular disease now, and we've shown through a variety of different studies, high level in the last 7 or 8 years, there's been 7 primary New England Journal articles that have studied treating aortic stenosis with transcatheter valves and surgery, and pretty much uniformly showed that there's dramatic improvements across a variety of patients, again, regardless of age or other comorbidities.
Yeah, so I know that when this procedure, this TAVR procedure first came out, you had to be pretty sick and pretty old to get those valves. That's changing now, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, as you said, when we first introduced this technology, we trialed it in patients who really didn't have any other option, patients who were not surgical candidates. And in that patient population, so patients who were not considered candidates for open heart surgery but had aortic stenosis that needed to be fixed, we compared medical therapy versus the transcatheter approach. And at 1 year, there was an absolute survival benefit of 20%. With the transcatheter option. And when you think of all the studies that you'll see in your medical career, certainly all the studies I'll see in my medical career that show an absolute survival benefit of 20% at 1 year, that's almost unheard of. So it was really an astounding finding. And based on that, we started looking to expand to the types of patients that we could offer it to, patients who were still high risk but for open heart surgery but were candidates for open heart surgery, and it was shown to be better than surgery for those patients. And then in lower risk patients, so we actually just completed a trial that included 65 sites in the U.S. to look at patients who are considered low risk for open heart surgery to compare TAVR to surgery. And the results of that study is not available yet, but I suspect that it's going to show that TAVR is at least as good as surgery. And so really at this point, for the overwhelming majority of patients, TAVR is a viable option.
Wow, and it's really an exciting development, I think. I suppose I certainly would rather, I know you're a cardiac surgeon, you love to operate, you love to make those big incisions, but it's such a nice thing if you can present patients with an option where you can go home the next day and have a little puncture in your groin and get your aortic valve replaced. So tell me now, at Newark Beth Israel Medical Center, what are some of the other conditions that you take care of?
So I do, as you said, I do conventional open heart surgery. I do catheter-based procedures. I do heart transplants. We have one of the largest heart transplant programs actually in the country. We have the only lung transplant program in the state of New Jersey. We have the only pediatric program. So we have a lot of high-end specialized cardiovascular services, which I think is one of the things that makes the hospital so unique, certainly unique in the state of New Jersey.
All right. So now if someone listening out there now has the diagnosis of aortic stenosis, what advice would you give that person? What's the right time to be operated on?
Conventionally, the people should be treated when they have symptoms. But I think at this point, it's even reasonable to be evaluated before the symptoms arrive. We're actually there's a national study going on looking at treating patients, again, without symptoms. The conventional treatment is, the conventional approach is to wait till patients develop symptoms, but the therapies have gotten so good that we actually believe that treating people earlier is likely to provide benefits. So if people have severe aortic stenosis or even moderate aortic stenosis, they should probably be evaluated by a heart valve expert. Again, there's great options. As you alluded to, I'm trained as a heart surgeon, and that makes up a significant percentage of my practice, but I also do catheter-based procedures. From my perspective, I want to see the patient get the best therapy for them. if it's acupuncture or aromatherapy, that's the best thing for aortic stenosis, and that's what we should be offering the patients. But we have great therapies to treat people, and they should certainly pursue them. And as you alluded to, in the past, there were patients who were considered too high risk for any therapy, and there are certainly people who probably have other comorbidities that may prevent them from benefiting, but from treatment. But the overwhelming majority of patients at this point, there are good options for them.
And Mark, unfortunately, the clock's going to pull us away, but I want to thank you so much for taking time on Saturday evening here. Mark Russo, MD, great surgeon at St. Barnabas, RWJ Barnabas Health. Thanks so much.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
And what is your wrinkle? I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. This is a show about you, and I hope you enjoy the show, and I hope you learn something from the show. But remember, I'm not your doctor. Unless you come and see me, then I am your doctor. But on the radio, I'm entertaining, I'm educating you, but I'm not treating your specific problem. So if you do have a problem and you listen to me on the radio and you alter your therapy, you can't do that. You have to see your own doctor and do it the right way. I'm just the guy on the radio, unless I'm your doctor. All right, we've got Pamela on the line. What can I do for you, Pamela?
It's about using Botox for, like, your frown lines, because I have a friend who did something about a year and a half ago or so, and she said one eyebrow, she was not able to move it, you know, like lift that eyebrow too well anymore, and it seemed to have stayed a little lower than the other one. So my concern was can you ever have some kind of nerve damage from any kind of injection like that?
From Botox. So your friend, it's always the friend, but it's always okay. So your friend had Botox. Now, a lot of people tell me, well, it's my friend, but it's me. But all right.
No, I'd like to try it.
All right. Let me tell you about Botox. First of all, one of the issues when we do Botox for the forehead, and by the way, those of you who don't know what Botox is, who doesn't know what Botox is now? It's so popular. Something like 6.5 million people had Botox last year. It is really very popular. Most common cosmetic procedure we do in plastic surgery or dermatology. So Botox is a great drug, and the way it works is it paralyzes the muscles. And wherever I inject it, it will paralyze the muscles. So there's an art to injecting it just the right way. And plastic surgeons have been doing this now for almost 20 years. I've been doing Botox, I guess it's 21 years. 1997, I started doing Botox. There's a real art to putting it just in the right spots so that we get just the right effect. We paralyze muscles and decrease wrinkles. Now, if you are chronically holding up your eyebrows because you have extra skin on your upper eyelids, and so many people do that, that's why a lot of people get those horizontal lines of the forehead, because they're holding up their brows. And the plastic surgeon needs to look at you, examine you. I have people close their eyes, try to get them to relax their forehead, and I like to see exactly the position of the brow without you bringing it up, without you lifting it and creating those wrinkles. And usually it's possible for me to make the observation just what position it is and what the effect of the Botox will be, because if you're chronically holding your brows up and your brows really have a lower position, when I Botox that muscle, they may drop. And it's variable, I have to say. Now, sometimes it just drops a little bit, and you look at it and say, well, that's fine. I still look much better without those wrinkles. But sometimes your brows drop a significant amount, and then you look like you have extra skin on your upper eyelids. And some people would rather have the wrinkles of the forehead than the extra skin of the upper eyelids. So, you know, that has to be discussed in advance with patients. Now, the good thing about Botox is also the bad thing about Botox. It only lasts about 4 months. And the average, the range is anywhere from 2 to 6 months. And I really very rarely would meet a person that gets more than 6 months out of it. Sometimes if they've had Botox for years and years, we'll get 8 months or even a little bit longer. I do have some patients that just come in once a year. People have been doing Botox for over a decade. But usually it's 4 months. So in answer to your question, can it cause permanent damage? I've never seen that. I've never seen it in the literature. You know, we should only be so lucky that we do one injection and really have a permanent result. You know, a lot of people would like that, but it can't happen. And that's because of the mechanism of action of Botox. And when I say Botox, by the way, it's kind of a generic term now, but there's also Xeomin, that's another company, and there's also Dysport. And my understanding is that there's going to be one or two more of those Botox-like products coming out next year. So it's going to be a crowded field. But the answer to your question is no, it's not going to cause permanent damage. And here's what I would bet. Now, I always take photographs of my patients before I do any procedure on them. And a lot of people really do not study their faces before their procedures, but everybody studies their face after the procedure. So it's really very important to document just how someone looked before we do any procedure, whether it's as small as Botox or as big as a facelift. We want to document just what you have. And I always point out to people their asymmetries beforehand. So your friend may have already had uneven eyebrows beforehand, But it wasn't until they really dropped with the Botox that she noticed that they were really asymmetrical when the Botox wore off. Probably, not definitely, but that's what I suspect, Pam.
I see. Can you just have more than one treatment when you first start with Botox, or can you get away with just one treatment the first time?
Sure, what you're asking about one treatment. So Botox is a temporary treatment. Remember, it only lasts about 4 months on average. So my average patient who likes the result of Botox, and that's almost everybody, comes in 3 times a year, every 4 months, to maintain the effect. So when it starts to wear off, or most people really, they kind of chart this. And women know when it's going to wear off after a 1 or 2, just like you know when your period is going to come. So you know, people come in usually a few days or a week before they expect the Botox to wear off. We maintain the effect, and that way the muscle doesn't have a chance to recover. And that way, when we do it that way, the wrinkles really go away because there's two components of the wrinkle. There's the wrinkle that's created from the pull of the muscle, but then there's the wrinkle of the skin that's there even without the muscle pulling. And I can, with Botox, get rid of the wrinkle that's created from the pull of the muscle, but only your body on your forehead can get rid of the wrinkle that is there when the muscle is not pulling. And it does that actually by healing it in to a certain extent. I mean, there are some tricks that we have, things like Ulthera, and now I'm putting these stitches in underneath the wrinkles. They're dissolving stitches, and they cause a generation of collagen. So there are some things that can be done. But for the most part, Botox just treats that muscle. All right, Pamela?
Injection, do you get one or do you get multiple the first time?
Oh, okay. That's your question. So here's how I do it. Now, there's differences in technique, and it's actually interesting because people who are sort of new to Botox, that's doctors who take those two-hour courses, they're taught that for the lines between the brows, for instance, those 11 lines they call them, they're taught to give 5 injections. And you know why they're taught that? They're taught that because when Botox first got its FDA approval, they had a very standardized study done that showed that it was correct, that it worked properly. When they did that, they were only allowed to advertise using Botox in that manner. And so then they taught it in that manner. But that's kind of senseless, in my opinion. What we want to do, I do artistic Botox. So for the muscles of the forehead, just for those vertical lines, I'll often do 20 injections, little tiny injections into the muscle. We use Emla cream, which is an anesthetic cream on your forehead. And for the most part, it doesn't hurt. They're little tiny needles. In fact, they're smaller than any needle for any vaccine you've ever had because they're made very specifically for Botox. For those of you who are in medicine, they're a 33-gauge needle we use. Those are really tiny. So we inject, and I inject. I kind of pepper the Botox. I call it a little micro Botox technique in the forehead, in the muscle. I have you move your muscle so I see really where it is. And I place it where it is needed, not where, you know, that protocol with 5 injections says to put it. And that makes more sense. And it gives you a much more natural result. All right, Pam?
Well, thank you very much for all your time.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling. And this is Dr. Arthur Perry. You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle? Right here on WABC. The phone number, 800-848-9222, 800-848-WABC. So we were talking about tattoos before we started talking about Botox and the lasers that remove tattoos. And they've been around for probably about 20 or so years. But boy, I'll tell you, you look on the streets of New York and the beaches of Long Island and the Jersey Shore, which you're about to go to in another couple days, believe it or not, there's going to be sun and it's going to be warm. You'll see all those tattoos, and many of those were considered mistakes. You know, I always say the decision to get a tattoo is between you and your mother. It should be safe, and in my opinion, the tattoos are not uniformly safe, but that's a whole different discussion. That's because of the sterility of pigment and the possibility of transmission of disease. But let's put all that aside, and let's figure, okay, you've already gotten your tattoo. So now it's the next morning, and you're looking at this thing. The alcohol has worn off. Well, what can I say? So many. I've had people come in the very next day to my office with these brand-new tattoos, and the mother drags the kid in. get this thing off. And you know, and then I've had people 20 years later, and they say, what was I thinking when I was 20, and now I'm 40, and look at this thing. It's on my wrist. It's on my right behind my ear. It's visible. I can't hide it with any clothing. What can I do? Well, there are solutions, and we're going to talk about what's called a Q-switched laser in just a few minutes when we come back from our break. The laser that can remove tattoos, and we've got it in our office, and we are removing tattoos, but with limitations. 800-848-922 is the phone number. Give us a call. We'll be back after these words.
You're listening to What's Your Wrinkle with Dr. Arthur Perry. What's your wrinkle?
And what is your wrinkle? I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. I'm a board-certified plastic surgeon, host of this show, the one you're listening to right now, which is the Plastic Surgery Show right here on WABC, and the skincare and the dermatology show. Those are the topics we talk about. And we add in a little general health things. We talked about aortic stenosis with a great guest from the Barnabas Health today. So I'm here for you. I'm here to answer your questions. 800-848-WABC. WABC. And we were talking about tattoos and maybe the mistake tattoo, or you know, maybe you're just tired of it. You know, it's been around a long time. I always say, you know, if someone told me that I was going to wear the pair of pants or the tie that I'm wearing today for the next 40 years, I'd say, of course, we're not going to do that. But that's exactly what you're doing. If you get a tattoo, you are stuck with that tie for the rest of your life, or that kerchief or that shirt. And, you know, so but what can I say? People are getting these things, but they're also coming to people like me, plastic surgeons or dermatologists, to have these things blasted off. So there's something called a Q-switched YAG laser. Wow, a lot of fancy names, right? There are different types of lasers that we were talking about, but this one is one that can remove certain colors of tattoo pigment. Now, it does best with black. That's the best one. If you're going to get a tattoo, if you're drunk out there and you absolutely, you know, you don't know what you're doing, get the black tattoo. Because if you get the ones with many colors, boy, they're even harder to remove. I'm not suggesting you get drunk and get a tattoo. I'm kidding. So, but certainly the ones that are the easiest are the black tattoos or the dark blue tattoos. They can come off you know, reasonably well with the laser. But what's the laser actually doing? The laser is actually heating up the pigment in the cells, so your cells devour that tattoo pigment. And the laser light gets specifically to that pigment, and it heats it up and blasts it. So it's actually killing the cells that contain the pigment. It blasts it and disperses it, and then other cells pick it up. So that's why it takes many treatments, because first it does it, and you get a little blurriness to the tattoo, and they do it again a month later, and it's more blurry, and it gradually blurs to the point that it's hard to see. So how many treatments does it take? Well, you know, it depends on how much pigment you have, what position it was placed in, whether it's a professional tattoo or a homemade tattoo. The homemade ones actually do better with the laser, because the pigment is usually more superficial. So there's a lot of different factors that come into play. It's a minimum of 3 treatments, and there is no maximum. You know, sometimes it's 6, sometimes it's 9. It depends. And everybody is left with a little bit of ghosting. And what is that? That means when we heat up this pigment, it also heats up the pigment in your melanocytes and depigments your skin. So, you know, this is a fact of life. What we're really doing is we're not erasing the tattoo. I wish we could just absolutely erase it. You can't do that yet. Not with the current technology and not with the pigments that are being used. But we can make the tattoo much less obvious, so that you can cover with maybe a traditional makeup as opposed to a dermablend makeup. You know, that's really what it's all about. Don't go into the plastic surgeon thinking you're just going to get the thing off. So there was a study about a year and a half ago that looked at the laser that I have, this Q-switched YAG laser. And they looked at 12 people with the tattoos, and they got about They call it about a 64% improvement in the tattoo, you know, based on the appearance and measuring the amount of pigment after three treatments. You say, well, it's not gone. Yeah, but it's a lot lighter and easier to cover. That's with three treatments. So, you know, the blue-black, yes. The red, yes. The ones that are the worst are the green tattoos. Those are very difficult. And my laser will not help that at all. You have to find the real laser gurus that own these $200,000 lasers that are very specific for the green pigment. And, you know, there's probably one or two in New York and maybe one in New Jersey. But if you've got a traditional tattoo, the YAG laser can do that. All right, Cheryl, you've been hanging on the line for a long time. What can I do for you? What's your wrinkle?
Yes. Good evening, doctor. Thank you for taking my call. And you have a great program. I must say your love of your profession comes through in your voice, and it's great.
Thank you.
Sir, I'm wondering if you do multiple treatments at one time, meaning if I was to come into you and you were recommending a surgery and I have lines over my lips, I probably need Botox, maybe some age spots. I even have a scar, but it's not anything terrible. I was just wondering if these items can be addressed at one time, or is it multiple visits, and is there an order that you like to go in?
Well, it all depends, Cheryl. It really does. So I used to do a lot of non-invasives in the operating room at the same time that I did the facelift. But here's what happens. When we do filler, you know, I've developed my technique, and I've talked about it on the show for, you know, many, many times, and it's a technique that's fairly time-consuming. I spend about an hour with you. It's a very artistic technique. I use these little micro droplets of filler, and, you know, I look from different angles, and I shine the light in different ways, and we fill the wrinkles around the lips and the nasolabial folds and the marionette lines and the lips themselves and the jowls and you know, so all sorts of injections. And, in fact, I do – my nurse stopped counting one day. I think she was up to, like, 400 injections, you know. But I numb you up so it doesn't hurt. So my technique is such that if we did it in the operating room when you're lying down, when there's a clock that is ticking and you're paying by the minute for operating room time and anesthesiologist time, you know, we're going to do it much faster, unfortunately. So the doctor is going to not take an hour and do a filler and sit you up and all that. So what's going to happen is I think you'll get an inferior result from filler if you have it in the operating room. So I don't do that anymore in the operating room. I do it either before or after. That's filler. And really, you know, when we talk about Botox, I'll tell you an anecdote. Remember we talked about science or anecdotes? I'll tell you an anecdote that I saw. This is probably about 10 years ago, and I believe in some article that I was in USA Today, I talked about this particular mishap that I saw from another doctor in the area who did a facelift and then injected Botox only a few days later, and the person was paralyzed. Now, this actually goes to the last person who called also about how long Botox can last. I did see a permanent Botox injury. I didn't create it, thank you, but I took care of a woman who had a facelift and then had Botox very shortly, a few days later, and she got the whole side of her face paralyzed when Botox was injected around her crow's feet. And how could that possibly have happened? Because the facelift opened up tissue planes, you know, and the Botox probably just drifted right to where the nerve comes out of the skull and destroyed it right there. And, you know, so that taught me an awful lot. It was never anything that I would do before that, but I would never inject Botox at the time of surgery or even for a short period afterwards. I generally wait about a month after. Now, it can be injected the day before your surgery. That doesn't make a difference. But there are these little nuances that your doctor needs to understand. So with Botox, we don't want to do it at the time of surgery. No. What about lasers? Well, often I will do a laser of, let's say, the eyelids when we're doing a facelift. It becomes a logistic question and a question of what someone wants to go through. Usually, I separate the surgery from the non-invasive procedures. You come in for the non-invasive procedures. You drive yourself home. There's minimal recovery when we're talking about lasers or Althera or fillers or Botox or peels. Those are usually done in the office. And we do reserve, I do reserve, the real procedures, meaning facelifts and eyelid lifts and brow lifts and rhinoplasties, things like that, for the operating room. All right, Cheryl?
Well, that's great. And thank you for an amazing show and learning so much, and I will definitely come see you.
Well, thank you very much. I look forward to meeting you. All right. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. This is What's Your Wrinkle right here on WABC, and today we're talking about all sorts of topics. We're talking about tattoos and how we get rid of them, and so let's finish up that discussion of tattoos. The laser that we use can be, I had a question at the break, actually, an email. Everybody likes to email me. No one likes to talk on the radio either. But anyway, the email said, does it hurt? Real simple question. Most of these lasers are uncomfortable but not terrible. And most of the lasers, like for hair removal or for tattoo removal or red mark removal, will use something called Emla cream. Emla is lidocaine cream. And we put it on the skin for about a half an hour beforehand, and it numbs you up. And we also use this little chiller device that cools the skin a bit. And when it does that, then it hurts less. So these are I've actually had a few things zapped off of me with the laser. It's the YAG laser, also for red marks. That's the one that I did on TV on the Dr. Oz show. I lasered Dr. Oz, and he sort of feigned pain. Actually, it was real pain. It hurt him, but it's not terrible. And men do much worse than women, and we all know that. Men are worse patients than women. Women have a much higher pain threshold. But with a little bit of maybe some Tylenol beforehand, with some Emla cream, these things are not uncomfortable. I'm Dr. Arthur Perry. The music means they're going to yank me right out of the studio in just a few seconds. Thanks so much for listening to me. We're going to be off next week for Memorial Day, but I'll be back in 2 weeks. Call me during the week at the office, 212-753-1820. Check me out on Facebook and perryplasticsurgery.com. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye now.
This program was sponsored by Dr. Perry Skindustries, LLC. The views expressed by the preceding program are those of the sponsor and not necessarily the opinions of 77 WABC or Cumulus Media.